Hi, everyone, and thank you for joining us on Amanita Minute. The purpose of this podcast is to share stories and insights so that all moms, current and future, can feel seen and connected in this journey that is motherhood. October is National Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Month, and while this is a tough topic, we need to break down the taboos of talking about miscarriage so that those who are going through it can get the support they need. Today on the show, I'm grateful to have Jean, a big piece of the co in Ama & Co, share her story and experience with miscarriage last year. Jean, thank you so much for being on the show. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Thank you for having me. So my name is Jean. I've been an operating room nurse for about a little over 10 years, specializing in orthopedics. I also have a nursing degree in nursing informatics, or master's degree in nursing informatics.
Mm-hmm. And more importantly, you are also a mom.
Yes, that is more of my other job. I've been a mom for 6 years to my daughter, Autumn, who is very independent and very sassy, and she's going to rule the world one day. But in the meantime, she is testing my patience every day.
So I'd like to start off at the beginning of this later pregnancy. Were you and your partner trying to conceive? And if so, for how long?
So why I actually mentioned my master's degree is because we were not trying for a very long time because I was in school for 3 very long years. And it just never seemed like a good time. And then by the time, you know, I was done, it was more like, if it happens, it happens. I wasn't strongly convinced in having kids in the first place. So having a second one was already something that, for me, it was like something I wanted to do for Autumn, for her to experience having a sibling because she adores her cousin.
How did you both feel when you found out you were pregnant?
You know, I think because, you know, Autumn was such a tough toddler, we were kind of scared initially in general because we knew, you know, newborn phase, we'll get through, it's fine. We were just like already looking towards the 2-year-old where we were kind of scared. But on top of that, we were a little concerned about, you know, towards the end of my first pregnancy, I ended up being high risk. So we were a little concerned with that. And I'm obviously much older now. So we were, you know, had some general concerns, but nothing that, you know, made me think what would happen later on, I guess.
So did you guys tell anyone when you found out?
I told a couple of close friends and like, that's what I mean. It's like, I knew I was high risk, but I just didn't think it was something I had to worry about, you know, having a miscarriage. So like I told a couple of close friends and a couple of people at work just because, you know, I had to explain why I had to take some time off for doctor's appointments.
Yeah.
And that was it. You know, I didn't tell anyone else.
What was high risk about your pregnancy the first time around with Autumn?
So I had gestational hypertension around 30 weeks, which led me to deliver her early. I was a little over 36 weeks when I had her. So we were concerned this time only about that. We were really focused on the end of the pregnancy and we just didn't even think about the other risks involved.
Gotcha. So talk about the first appointment.
Luckily, it was, you know, after it was pretty much people were acting like COVID was over, but our practice did require my partner to have vaccination and we had to show it. We had to show his vaccine card. So he came with me to my first visit and, you know, we went through the general questions and, you know, we were asking about, you know, my cardiac workup because I had gestational hypertension, those kind of things. And then it led to the first sonogram, which most people are like very excited for. And we were, you know, we were excited too. But during the sonogram, I realized something was wrong because my obstetrician, just her reaction was like, oh, that's the baby right there. There's the heartbeat, but it's kind of slow. And then she was measuring the baby and it was measuring a week behind because that was supposed to be 7 weeks, but it was measuring 6 weeks. So she was like, okay, why don't we just get a repeat sonogram next week to see viability? And just using that word, it really set me on this path of thinking about what I wasn't thinking about all this time, which is like, this could actually be a miscarriage happening. Mm-hmm. But I was still being pretty, you know, optimistic. Like, I was like, okay, like, maybe my menstrual cycle's off because, you know, mm-hmm. I do kind of a good job tracking it, but who knows?
Yeah, and plus you guys weren't, like, trying, so it's hard to pinpoint
exactly
when, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that was our first visit. And mm-hmm. it was a very different feeling, though, because when I left, I definitely, even though I was optimistic, I was cautiously optimistic, but I just had a gut feeling something was wrong.
Mm. Do you think your medical knowledge and your profession played a part in that?
I don't think so. What kind of played a part in it was because the week before my first visit, it was Halloween, mm-hmm. and it was on a weekend. So that means for kids, Halloween's an all-day event. Mm-hmm. So we spent the whole day, it felt like, walking around getting candy. And then at one point towards the end, I was having very sharp pains.
Oh, wow.
So when I realized at that first OB visit, I was like, that's probably when things started to go downhill. Mm-hmm. Because I was feeling the sharp pains. I was mm-hmm. feeling uncomfortable, but I couldn't really explain it.
Did you have any spotting?
I didn't. Not at that mm-hmm. point. Mm-hmm. So, but I did feel like sharp pains after trick-or-treating, and I was just like, no, I have to go home. So I don't think it's my medical knowledge. It was actually just like my maternal like instinct, I think. Where I was like, mm-hmm. there's something wrong.
Yeah. So the doctor had recommended going back the next week, following up, mm-hmm. Just checking the progress. How was that? Did your partner accompany you then as well? Was there any new news?
So yeah, he came with me, but he couldn't come with me to the procedure room because OB practice they don't have sonographers there. Mm-hmm. So I had to do it at the hospital. Mm. And with the hospital policy, I couldn't have my partner there. So, which would have been probably more comforting if he had been there when I got the news, because, mm-hmm. you know, the sonographer was very excited for me, you know, it's like, okay, let's do the sonogram. And then she got very quiet.
Yeah. So she didn't know.
She didn't know.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I mean, she might not. I don't know. She might have read it and, yeah. you know, was also being optimistic. I don't really know. She just was like, okay, so you're here, you know, like
yeah.
she seems very chatty. And then during the exam, she got very quiet. Mm. And when I asked to see, I was like, can I see the baby? And she mm-hmm. was like, she immediately, you know, stopped the procedure and was like, I have to call the radiologist mm. and then left the room. Mm. So that was also a very clear sign something was wrong.
Yeah.
So that was our first ultrasound visit.
Mm-hmm. So then what happened from there? The radiologist came in.
The radiologist came in, said the baby still went measuring at 6 weeks.
Okay.
But this time there was no heartbeat.
Mm.
Which, you know, they were like, well, it could be that the baby is still kind of early. But in my head, I was like, but the obstetrician told me there was a heartbeat.
Yeah, earlier. Visit. Right.
Yeah. But the radiologist just recommended I follow up with my obstetrician. So I did. Mm-hmm. And she said, I thought I saw it, but maybe, you know, because I'm not a trained sonographer, maybe I didn't see the right thing. So we're going to do another repeat ultrasound following week. Yeah. So I think between the first and second ultrasound, I just really couldn't concentrate on anything because I realized what was happening. And even though everyone's being cautiously optimistic, I was not in the same place they were. And I just started to really just fall apart internally.
Mm.
Because, you know.
Yeah, did you have, I mean, did you take time off?
I didn't take time off yet. I did have some trouble just concentrating at work and concentrating mm-hmm. in general. I think my hormones are also out of control a little bit. Mm-hmm. So it's like just sad. Because mm-hmm. as a mom, you blame yourself for every little thing, right? When something's wrong with your kid.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, like, man, I shouldn't have done all those workouts, or I shouldn't have like done like that many miles of walking for yeah. Halloween, you know, yeah. like, and I was blaming myself for things that I was trying to do to keep myself healthy, you know, exercising is in hindsight should never be something that is a negative thing.
Yeah.
So during that week, it was a lot of me just blaming myself. Mm.
Do you think Autumn sensed it, or were you pretty good at separating the two?
No, she had no idea. Yeah, fortunately, we had my partner's brother in town for the week mm-hmm. as well. So that was like a good distraction for everybody. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So they give you the news that the baby doesn't seem to have progressed. They want you to wait another 2 weeks, and then you go in again for, like, I guess, another ultrasound?
Yeah.
Okay. So at this point, you're what week?
At this point, I was probably week 9 mm-hmm. or 10, 9 or 10.
Okay.
So I was 9 weeks, yes. I went in. My partner didn't come with me this time because he had something to do for work, which is fine. I was prepared for bad news. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're just like, we didn't know what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. So I went in by myself. The sonographer was a different person. She was more a matter of fact, okay, this is what the procedure you're here for. And then, mm-hmm. you know, when she was done, she was like, I have to call the attending. I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of like a repeat of the previous visit. Mm-hmm. And then she came back and was saying, she said that my obstetrician would call me back. Mm-hmm. So I was like, and I was free to go. Mm-hmm. So, but that there was, the radiologist did mention that there was no heartbeat.
I found that too with my pregnancies, like, it's so frustrating when the radiologist is like disconnected from the OB and they're like, I can't tell you anything, you have to go to your OB. You're like, you're literally in front of me. You know,
yeah.
And then you're just like, this is so annoying. I have to wait another, I mean, if you can get an OB appointment to stack with your ultrasound, great. But if you can't, then you have to wait another day or 2 days after you just did the test and you know other people know the result.
Yeah. As a patient, it is very frustrating. You know, it was like my first visit. It's like, can I see the baby? It's like, no. And she like hid all the equipment right away. Like, I mean, I know that they have to remain professional.
Yeah.
And I understand from a nurse's point of view, I understand why they're doing what they're doing. But as a patient, and at that time I was a patient.
Yeah.
It was frustrating.
Why didn't they want you to see the baby though?
That's probably a good question that I don't have a real answer to. But my guess is they knew my background and they probably yeah. just didn't want me to, you know, they didn't know as far as my knowledge on reading yeah. sonograms. So they just didn't want me to see anything, you know?
Yeah.
But it just, all of this just kind of prolongs the agony.
Yeah.
Because then I leave the appointment, I call my partner, I'm in tears because I'm like, yeah. the baby has no heartbeat.
Yeah.
So I'm sure this is a miscarriage. Yeah. Like, I'm sure yeah. of it.
Yeah.
So a few hours later, my obstetrician called and she was like, this is presenting as a miscarriage. You know, she told me what I already knew. Mm-hmm. So at that point, most of my emotions were already out of my system yeah. by the time she called. But she gave me my options, which was to take the pill that would, you know, stimulate the abortion or to have a DNC.
What's a DNC?
So DNC, it's technically called a dilation and curettage. So they go in and they remove the baby, which mm-hmm. is, it's basically an abortion, but mm-hmm. medically necessary. Mm-hmm. So I decided to go that route mm-hmm. instead of taking the pill. Mm-hmm. But she immediately said that she doesn't do that, so she would have to refer me to somebody else. Mm-hmm. So to make the process already agonizing and it's sometimes cold, because I felt every ultrasound felt kind of cold. Just was being passed from provider to provider.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Which the patient in me was like, didn't feel great, but the nurse in me understood why. So I was like, you know, some providers are certified to do things and some aren't. I understand that.
Yeah.
So,
or I wonder if it's just so like hard for them also that they just get like desensitized from it. Cause like, obviously they like, who wants to deliver bad news, right? Who wants to see this happen? And they just have to kind of be like removed from it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's understandable, but all of this was, it was kind of missing a little bit of the human touch when I look back.
Oh yeah, 100%. I also feel like it's so crazy that you had to go to like three different practices because, you know, like the last thing you want to do is call someone and be like, hey, like, can you schedule me for a DNC, right? Like,
well, so that was the good part. Actually, my obstetrician's office, she called the other doctor's office and helped me make that.
That's what I was like, yeah, okay, good. Because I was like, you know, they're just kind of like passing you along to the next person, like hot potato. And I feel like that's a hard call to make. And so it's good that they did it for you. Okay, so you decide to go with the DNC. Can you walk us through the procedure in whatever detail you have? Because I know it's like surgery. So obviously you're not like the most awake.
I mean, so it's you're fully awake. It's an outpatient procedure. It's performed in an office, regular GYN office. Mm-hmm. I was prescribed anti-anxiety med the night before. Mm-hmm. The doctor who I've never met called me to confirm that I received it, told me I should take it before the procedure. So I felt sad, but I felt good enough that I didn't think I needed it. But at the same time, I took it anyways, just in case.
Yeah.
So I arrived to our appointment. It just seemed like I was very numb to everything. Yeah. And it also seemed very surreal.
Yeah. Did you feel like time was moving fast or slow?
Slow. Definitely slow. Like, it just seemed like I was taking everything in.
Yeah.
Very slowly, because I just couldn't believe I was at that point.
Yeah, and it's hard. I mean, it's like you're essentially saying bye, right, to this whole thing, that this whole life that could happen, right? This whole like part of your life that could happen. So I would imagine it's super slow. And at the same time, you like, it's like ironic. You kind of almost want to savor it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I definitely felt like I was saying bye to my child, you know? So maybe that's why everything was going a little slow. Like you said, maybe I wanted to savor it a little bit. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's like I wanted to say bye, but the baby had already gone for weeks at that point.
Yeah.
But I still felt so, like, attached. And I couldn't really pinpoint why, because the, you know, logical part of me was still there. It was like, okay, this baby's not, you know, lost his heartbeat, like, weeks ago.
Yeah.
But I just always was like, felt like he or she was still there.
Yeah.
So we arrive to the office. I meet the lady who I've never met before, the gynecologist. She just goes over the procedure with me, you know, does, you know, her checks to make sure that, you know, I'm very well aware of the procedure and the risk and everything. And then she just, you know, asks if she wants my partner to stay. And I said, no, I didn't really want him there, to be honest.
Why is that?
Because, you know, the whole journey for me felt like it was a very solo journey. Mm-hmm. You know, I had friends who knew, who were trying to comfort me in one way or another and be there, which is fine. My partner, same thing. But like, at the end of the day, no matter what they were saying, it felt like I was by myself in this journey. I think partly because it was happening to my body.
Yeah.
The feelings, the emotions, you know, actually what the providers were doing to me. Everything was just, it was happening to me.
Yeah.
You know? And I knew just from being an operating room nurse, like, it's probably better for loved ones to not be in the procedure room. So the nurse in me came out and was like, I'm going to be fine. Please just wait in the waiting room because I don't want anything to happen where it might, you know, scar you for life. Which is, you know, like, I mean, unfortunately, we walk parents into operating room too, and that's already scary enough for them. And we usher them out. It's like kind of the same thing. It's like, you know, he was there to support me. That was great. But like, I was like, for your sake, please just go, because I don't think you want to be here for the whole thing.
Yeah.
So, and I knew I was going to be fine. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, even though it was a very solo journey, I knew I was strong enough to get through this last part by myself. So they start the procedure kind of like a regular annual pap smear checkup, you know, they, so they do numb your cervix first, which already, so I tend to have a vasovagal reaction when I guess anything goes into my cervix because I've had IUDs and I've fainted on the table a few times.
Oh, wow.
Just from IUD insertion.
Yeah.
So I was kind of prepared and I was already starting to feel flush when they try to, when they numb my cervix, which was a bad sign. I already knew that. And I let her know of my past. I let her know of my past history. And she was like, okay, we'll take it slow. And then they start to try to dilate me.
That seems painful.
You know, it was, she said it was a little pinch and it was, you know, that was just really a little pinch, but you know, I know it's much scarier when you're a woman, when you hear that.
Yeah. It's like a car jack, like they crank it.
Yeah. It sounds very scary, but they numb it before they do anything, you know, mechanical to open it up. So it was just a little pinch. So I was like, fine. But I could feel like the flushing feeling. And I wasn't sure if it was the meds or if I was going to pass out again.
Oh, no.
And but I just told her, I was like, this is my medical history. It's happened before. I wanted to tell her, almost to warn her that this might happen. So almost like, hey, if I stop talking all of a sudden, this is why. So, you know, they proceed with the procedure. And sure enough, I got to the point where I passed out on the table. So I wake up with like three ladies standing above me. Like, but in my initial instinct was like, I don't know who any of these people are. Yeah. And then it just like dawned on me, like, what happened? And they were like, is everything okay? The procedure's done. I was like, I think so. Like, I was still trying to get my bearings.
Yeah.
Of like where I was. And, you know, the nurse, well, the nurse who wasn't at the beginning of procedure, I think she called her in because it was an emergency. You know, she was stroking my hand and she's like, everything's going to be okay. I was like, I know everything will be okay. But like in my heart, I just felt sad.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
That's so tough.
It is.
Like, I don't have the words, you know, like I feel like, I mean, I haven't had that experience, but you telling it to me, I'm like, I can almost imagine like laying there and then just kind of like waking up and being like knowing what happened, you know, and just feeling like a little bit empty.
Yeah, I mean, like during those agonizing weeks when we didn't know if the baby was viable or not, like I just kept saying like to myself, like I just wish this would be like a normal miscarriage, because the the unknown was killing me. And then after having the procedure, I wished it even more because it was so traumatic, the procedure.
Yeah.
Because everyone who did know was like, are you okay? I was like, you know, I was fine up until this point, really, because with the actual physical procedure, it was, it's never, I don't know, like, who's ever really fainted before, but like, it's not a great feeling.
Yeah.
So it's like, that was like the cherry on top of the, of everything that happened. It was right around Thanksgiving. It was right after Thanksgiving, the procedure. So it was just, I was having a really tough time finding, you know, I'm usually thankful this time of year.
And right.
I was having a really tough time with it.
Yeah. And then just having like the holiday and all this family time and like,
Yeah.
I don't know how many people you let in on like this piece of your life, but you know, I could imagine being around like relatives and, you know, maybe you had envisioned sharing the news with them then and you couldn't, right? Like it's.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was tough. Like,
So this was about a year ago. I mean, not that anyone is ever over it, but like how long did it take for you to kind of feel a little less sad about it and like feel like you've had closure from this?
So the good part of my job is that once you get back to work, it's so crazy that your mind kind of doesn't think about these things, you know, like it's your focus on the patients and what's going on at work. And I went back to work the day after the procedure.
Oh, wow.
Because I knew it was going to keep me busy. And I had taken enough time off, basically grieving my child. Yeah. At that point, I probably took almost 2 weeks off grieving. And like, I was like, you know, I have to go back to work. Because the logical part of me was like, I know once my hormones stabilize, I'm going to be okay.
Yeah,
and that's just from experience from even giving birth to my daughter. I knew that like once my state, my hormones were like at a good place, like I would be at a good place. Yeah. So I threw myself back into work. And over time, I just felt better. Mm-hmm. You know, I was doing the daily, you know, grind, and it took away some of that pain already.
Mm-hmm. Did you experience any of the postpartum symptoms?
Just like I had really bad pregnancy bloat right after.
Okay.
So that initially made me kind of sad because it was like, okay, now I have the baby bump. Like, this is crazy. So just that I had very minimal bleeding. It's not what you think. Like you don't, it's not like an immediate postpartum. Okay. It's like very minimal. Mm. I didn't even have my first period until much later that month. But actually after that procedure, my period was more regular. It was irregular before that, but it actually kind of almost like set everything straight. Yeah. It's okay. I would want to share that, like, I know everyone means well, like family and friends, when they try to be there for you through something hard like this, but that it's okay if it's just a solo journey. Because I think that sometimes listening to the outside world telling you, oh, it's okay, at least you can get pregnant, or it's okay, you could try again, like that stuff doesn't really help. So I think it's something to share, is that like it's okay if you just take it and keep it with yourself for a little bit. Like now I have no problem talking about it, but during that time it was almost like, I don't know if I want to talk about it because people are saying some really scary things to me, like telling,
like almost like you don't want to engage with the conversation.
Yeah, they were saying things that I'm like, that wasn't really making me feel better. It's actually making me feel worse.
Yeah.
And I think it's okay to have that, you know, solo journey by yourself. You don't, I mean, you definitely lean on people if that's what makes you feel better, but I just want to say it's like it's okay.
Thank you for your vulnerability and courage to share so much today. For those of you listening, Jean is also a writer for Amma & Co. You can find her articles on our website, www.ammaandco.com, and links to the features on our Instagram. Lastly, if someone is letting you know about this window of their life, it's kind of an indicator you're in their circle of trust, and we need to be there for them in this crucial time. But as Jean mentioned, you can still show your support without being on top of that person when they're trying to grieve. Allow them the space to grieve. So throughout this month, you'll also find different articles on pregnancy loss, including ways you can support someone. And if you have ideas of how to support someone or would like to share your story, we'd love to hear from you. Please send us a message on Instagram or comment on our posts related to this episode. See you next time.